Tonight I'll be talking about child health and the political context of Indonesia and the right to health that children have in Indonesia. In fact, I'll be talking about legal context, which is that everyone in Indonesia has an articulated constitutional right to health. I'll first talk about the definition of child health, briefly, the international definitions of health, the relationship with human rights, the right to health under international human rights law, and the use of human rights as a tool to improve health in Indonesia, actually anywhere. You can do it even in the United States. So the World Health Organization has a very broad definition of health. And clearly, as you all probably know, health is more than health care. Health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. And that definition of health speaks to the social determinants of health, such as access to water, such as housing access, access to food, and freedom from human rights abuses as well. So human rights promotes child health in particular by providing a framework to respect, protect, and fulfill the right to health. And that's specific human rights language. Respecting, protecting, and fulfilling rights are the obligations of the state. And I'm including child health, of course, as part of the definition of health. We'll get to the specific definition of child rights and how child rights articulate specific duties of states to provide certain health rights, I would say, in just a bit. So the right to health for children is what I'll be talking about. We can go back to the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which, by the way, was led by Americans. The chair of the Human Rights Commission, for those who don't know the history, is that Eleanor Roosevelt led the U.S. mission and chaired the Human Rights Commission and drafted with all her colleagues, many from not all the countries in the U.N. at this time, but many colleagues around the world from very different cultural backgrounds. They drafted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It is an American concept to have human rights. And in Article 25, I'm getting to specific health language, it talks about the health and well-being of himself and of his family. And we understand it to be her family as well, and includes the determinants of health, access to food, clothing, housing, medical care, and necessary social services. The next international human rights document that speaks to health is the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights of 1966. This Article 12.1 has very powerful language, and it says that the state's parties, or those signatories to the document, recognize the right of everyone to the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health. (Clears throat) bronchitis with any water tonight. So, the UN has committees, and the UN Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights in 2000 felt that there was a need to write a body of work about the highest attainable standard of health. And the reason they did that was between 1966 and 2000, there were a lot of questions about what it meant to implement the highest attainable standard of health. Now, I also have to say that the ICESCR, or the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, it's always abbreviated because it's hard to say, is a document clearly about economic and social rights, and all those economic and social rights are understood to be progressively realized. So that the drafters of the political and civil rights documents understand that there's a duty to implement immediately. And that's easier to do for societies and governments because they're considered to be negative rights. If you do not torture, one would argue, you don't have to expend a lot of resources. If you are implementing rights, such as rights to health, a right to access food, shelter, then governments feel a big burden, and a big economic burden, and therefore, in their wisdom, the UN drafters and the committee drafters decided early on, actually discussions started right after World War II, but certainly in the drafting of these international covenants on economic, social, and cultural rights and civil and political rights documents, that the social and economic rights really had to be progressively realized. And what that means is that there has to be positive movement towards implementing them. And you can't backslide. You need to positively implement them. But there aren't specific measures like you have to implement this amount or this percentage. So there's some leeway. It's mostly intent and some movement. So I digress, because Comment 14 on the highest attainable standard of health says that health is a fundamental human right, indispensable for the exercise of other human rights. Again, the committee felt a need to explain what that language meant. It meant that the right to health is not the right to be healthy. And the comment speaks about the right as extending not only to timely and appropriate health care, but also to the underlying determinants of health, such as access to safe and potable water, adequate sanitation, an adequate supply of safe food, nutrition, housing, healthy environmental conditions, access to health-related education and information, including sexual and reproductive health. Comment 14 also, says a further aspect is the participation of the population in all health-related decision-making at the community, national, and international levels. And interestingly enough, the lawyers who drafted this comment talk about in their document, they're not epidemiologists, but they they certainly talk about measuring the right to health. And there are four indicators: availability, accessibility, acceptability, and quality. They're talking about, in terms of availability, are there health centers? Is there information? Accessibility, is it in all languages? Is it the right distance so people can walk or ride a bus? Or do they have access to the right treatments, the right drugs? Acceptability is cultural acceptability in general, acceptability by the local community. And quality speaks to quality of information and services. Now, CEDAW is the Women's Convention, the International Women's Convention. It's the convention on the elimination of all forms of discrimination against women. And it was written because there was a need to write and elaborate on how to eliminate discrimination against women. In 1979, the UN passed this document as a General Assembly vote. And they voted to implement this treaty on the worldwide arena so that countries could sign and ratify this international legal document, which was binding. This is a binding agreement if a country ratifies this document. And they have to, again, progressively realize the economic and social rights, and they have to immediately realize the civil and political rights. Now, CEDAW is also a convention that really is a guide for national governments to implement their own law in their country. All of these international legal documents are really most enforceable if they're written into local law, national law, or state law. The Convention on the Rights of the Child is specifically focused on children. Obviously, there was a need, the drafters thought, and rightfully so, that children needed protection. They needed a new international legal document to articulate the details of how to protect children. Article 6 talks about children having the inherent right to life. A child is anyone below the age of 18 years. So this age range, of course, is the adolescent age range. Children have the right to survival and development. And there is an article that articulates the right to access information and material from a diverse national and international source. And again, this language, the right of the child to the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of health. This is another article, Article 27, that talks about a standard of living adequate for the child's physical, mental, spiritual, moral, and social development. So, how can this be used in Indonesia or any other country to improve and promote better child health? Well, as I was explaining, these international laws can actually provide national and state governments with language so that they can actually write their own and adopt their own laws that are very similar to the international legal documents. And Indonesia did that. In 2000, they amended the constitution, the 1945 constitution, and they provided a right to health for everyone in Indonesia. Indonesia, again, every country has to sign and ratify, or there are some other legal procedures that countries can go through to sort of ratify with extension or succession into a treaty. Indonesia has signed and ratified in the broad sense the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, CEDAW and CRC. And just as an aside, in the United States, we have signed all of these. We have ratified none. The ICESCR was signed and ratified in 2000. Well, it was signed earlier and ratified through extension in 2006. And therefore, that ratification obligates Indonesia to provide a report to the UN committee. In 2 years. So they're actually in the process frantically trying to put together a report of what they have done in the last 2 years to progressively realize the rights in the ICESCR. And this is an opportunity for civil society. What NGOs are doing in Indonesia is writing a shadow report. Governments, I can say in general, like to write up reports that are glowing. They often, like to look at the brighter side of things. And so NGOs, as voices of civil society, really do need to write up what is called a shadow report, a separate report that they provide to the committee so that the committee at the UN really understands what's going on the ground. And indeed, that's what we've been involved with in Indonesia. We have a coalition of NGOs working on a shadow report, and Uplift International, the NGO I'm working with, has been working on the right to health issues, trying to get information about what the reality of child rights is in Indonesia. Now, this process is a very good process. It certainly requires a lot of collaboration, and we're very happy about that, and that's very successful. There are challenges for NGOs to get involved in this process. It is not usually funded in the full sense of the word funding. It requires a lot of staff time and dedication, an awful lot of effort, and there are huge opportunity costs for NGOs, as you can imagine. So the process is a very important one. It's a very important one for the country, for development, for human rights in general. But it is very challenging. Perhaps in the future there will be more funding for NGOs to actually work on documenting human rights and child health. So this is information on the websites you can visit if you're more interested in what we're doing. And that's the end. Thanks.